Hi, Damien Carrick with you. Welcome to the Law Report. Today, we're cracking down on dodgy migration agents. Getting migration advice can be a costly exercise in more ways than one. First, there are expensive fees and charges. And second, bad or fraudulent advice can have serious repercussions. Today, you'll hear from a young Italian woman banned from Australia for 3 years through no fault of her own. And also from a Melbourne retiree who is tens of thousands of dollars out of pocket and has been separated from his wife for almost 2 years. Journalist Peter Mayers has been investigating the issue for the Law Report.
I met them three times before signing the contract, and we paid Denis Allan $8,000 to work on my application. But he just never lodged my application.
He had a blackboard up there and he had a, you know, sign. We go to the agency, go up there, bang, 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 type it in, one, two, three questions, I don't know what you put on the board. Pointed them all out to me and all that time. They looked very good, looked very good. It was just plain lies. Lie, lie, lie.
He ripped me off and I just trusted it him. I mean, I've been stupid, but what you can do, like, you're an immigrant. You're talking to someone in an office in the city center of Melbourne, and how can you imagine that? How can you imagine that he's going to rip you off?
Camilla Pavato is an Italian costume designer in her early 30s. Michael Williamson, a retired fitter and turner from Glenroy in Melbourne's north. Both are owed thousands of dollars by former registered migration agent Dennis Keith Allan, director of Prestige Global Investments, which operates under the business name Prestige Migration Services. Camilla Pavato came to Australia on a working holiday visa in March 2014, and from the moment she set foot here, she felt at home.
I don't know, everyone seems to be so happy. It's maybe because of the sunshine, because of your economical situation, I don't know, but yeah, I just fell in love with it.
Originally planning to spend just a few months in Australia, Camilla extended her stay to 2 years by obtaining a second 12-month working holiday visa. This second visa option was introduced 10 years ago to encourage backpackers to fill gaps in the rural labour market. You qualify by working for at least 88 days in agriculture, forestry, fishing, mining or construction in a regional area. For Camilla, this meant packing fruit in Shepparton, a job she would never have considered in Italy.
No, never. I didn't want to go farming to obtain my second year visa. I was just scared. Because, you know, you hear many stories about farming in Australia, about dangerous animals and things like that. But it became just one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life.
As the end of her second working holiday visa drew near, Camilla looked for other ways to stay in Australia, and her employer offered to sponsor her for a temporary work visa. But neither she nor her boss knew much about the migration system.
So we just decided to contact a migration agent to investigate the best options for us. And yeah, that's the moment where everything turned into a nightmare.
Camilla went to see Denis Allan. She had reason to trust his advice because he was registered as a migration agent with the Australian Immigration Department. She checked on the website of the OMARA, the Office of the Migration Agents Registration Authority. But her trust proved misplaced. Camilla is now $8,000 out of pocket and back in Italy. I spoke to her by Skype. And she's been banned from returning to Australia for 3 years because, thanks to Denis Allan, she inadvertently overstayed her visa.
He ripped me off and he failed to submit my sponsorship, my visa. And I resulted illegally in Australia, unlawfully in Australia, and I got kicked out last year in June. It's something automatic, like my visa expired in March 2015, and so I just remained in the country without a visa, and that means being illegal.
And the reason you stayed without a visa is because you thought he had lodged the paperwork for a new visa.
Yeah, exactly.
So you didn't know you were unlawful?
No, totally. I didn't know that. Dennis Allan was registered under the Omara register. So
you mean you didn't have any reason to distrust him because he was a registered migration agent under the official system?
Yeah, exactly. So where is the point of having the Omara if you can't trust their agents? I mean, it's a bit pointless.
What Camilla Pivato didn't know was that before she went to see Dennis Allan, OMARA, the Office of the Migration Agents Registration Authority, had already received three serious complaints against him. The first complaint had been lodged 6 months earlier. The second complaint, lodged 3 months earlier, came from Michael Williamson.
The whole system has cost me over $80,000. Legal costs and all that type of thing, and the visas and all that type of thing, $80,000. And I got nothing for it at all. Nothing.
Michael Williamson paid Dennis Allan $30,000 to fix the migration status of his wife, Shen. Shen's from China, but she'd overstayed her visa and was in Australia unlawfully when the couple first met 5 years ago. Michael Williamson was then in his mid-60s, Shen was 10 years younger, and they struck up a relationship over the back fence.
A very funny story. She used to live next door to me, and one day she was put her head over the fence and said, would you like to cut me backyard? The English is not too good, but that was the first day we met.
So you got to know her because she asked you if you wouldn't mind cutting her lawn?
Cutting her lawn, yes, yeah. Instead of saying cut, she said cut, you know. Got the scissor thing, and, you know, as I say, I like joking. And that was very funny, and, you know, to me. And ever since then, you know, she brought in some soup and everything. I met her on the train a few times, and we started the talk. She cannot speak much English, but we got on pretty well face-to-face, and we just went from there.
About 2 years after they met, Michael and Shen got married. It was a welcome turn in the life of the retiree who'd never been married before.
Marriage never came into my life. I was quite happy being single. I was working and everything. And when I started to get older, I had a triple bypass done. And when you retire and you're staying home and you wake up in the morning, you feel very lonely. And we had terrific fun together, be told. I miss her very much. And it was part of my life that she filled that spot very well. I was told about her overstaying a visa. That had nothing to do with me marrying her. I married her for her personality, and we got on very well together.
But I guess you hoped once you were married that you'd be able to find a way to sort out her visa problem so you could stay together.
Well, the only way I could correct it was to go to an agency. The first one was very honest to us. She told me that she must leave the country and apply overseas for a visa. And me being pig-headed, because I never knew much about the system, so we went to another agent. It was Dennis. He said she won't have to leave the country. And that was it.
Dennis Allan's actions didn't match his words. The immigration department told Shen she had to leave Australia. And in September 2014, her husband Michael put her on a plane back to China.
I felt like killing myself. You know, I went home, got in the bed, and I turned around and I said to myself, what's the good of living? You know, I ring her up every day of the week, and she begs me to bring her home. And I turn around and say, I can't do nothing. But your husband to his wife, he turns around and says, I can't help you. Financially now, I can't help her financially. I can't go over to see her because I haven't got the money to go over there now because of this Dennis. And every time, I want to come home, I say, you can't. Simple, you cannot come home.
Melbourne retiree Michael Williamson. Since November last year, I've made numerous attempts to contact Dennis Allan for his side of this story. I've sent texts and emails, I've left messages with staff at Prestige Migration Services, and I've asked Mr. Allan's lawyer to ask him to call me. I've never heard back. This is the Law Report on RN, Radio Australia, ABC News Radio, and on the ABC Radio app. I'm Peter Mayers, and today I'm investigating the regulation of migration agents. Along with Michael Williamson and Camilla Pivato, five other clients of Dennis Allan also complained about him to OMARA, the Office of the Migration Agents Registration Authority, which is part of the Immigration Department. In February, more than 1.5 years after the first complaint was lodged, OMARA released its decision. It upheld all seven complaints. It found Dennis Allan had been dishonest and reckless, and that he systematically took payment for work that he did not do. His conduct demonstrated a blatant disregard for the law and for his clients' legitimate interests, causing them significant harm, substantial financial losses, and emotional stress. OMARA banned Dennis Allan from registering as a migration agent for 5 years. This was the stiffest penalty available. Michael Williamson's lawyer, John Davey, says OMARA's dealings with Dennis Allan reveal a case of regulatory failure.
OMARA is set up primarily to protect consumers, and in this particular case, they haven't. And the thing that is most offensive about this case is that the OMARA had enough foreknowledge and other complaints to consider that they should have been alerted to the misconduct of Dennis Allan. And throughout this process, they did nothing to intervene. Now, it's all good and well to say, as the OMARA may, that they didn't have the powers to do that, but they also have the powers to refer to police and other agencies, and they didn't do so.
On what basis could they possibly have made this a criminal matter?
Well, one of the significant features of the Williamson's case is that they gave money to Mr. Allan for the purposes of visa application charge. And the way that trust monies work, this is essentially a trust monies issue, is that if you give money to someone for a particular purpose, they can't pocket it. They can't just apply it to their own invoices or use it in any other way. It was visa application charge money that Mr. Allan retained. It should have been refunded when it became evident that the visa couldn't be applied for. That money is still missing, and as best as I'm aware, the police haven't investigated that.
What we're talking about here is money that is going to be paid to the Immigration Department for a visa, and what's known as a visa application charge. And these are very significant sums of money, aren't they?
Oh, yes. It's over $6,000 for a partner visa now. And the Williamsons lost in total, when the civil litigation commenced, in total $30,000. For an application that couldn't be made in Australia, and should never have been, they should never have been given the advice that they could have stayed in Australia, or Mrs. Williamson could stay in Australia.
On behalf of his clients, the Williamsons, John Davey took civil action to retrieve the money they had paid to Dennis Allan. In December, the Broadmeadows Magistrates Court ordered Mr. Allan and the company Prestige Global Investments to pay Mr. and Mrs. Williamson a total of $54,000. But this apparent success only made matters worse.
The sum total of that experience was that it doubled the losses for the Williamsons, because Mr. Allan defended this right up until the last day. And even though we were successful, the judgment can't be enforced because Mr. Allan's shot through. Just having Pyrrhic victories when magistrates say, yes, you're entitled to the money back, and not being able to get that money back is not a system of regulation.
John Davey compares the work of migration agents to the work of lawyers. Both take significant sums of money from their clients on trust. So he believes they should be held to similar levels of accountability.
Well, most legal practices run what's known as a regulated trust account. And the nature of trust monies is that if money is to be paid in the future for some purpose, it has to go into this regulated trust account. And those bank accounts are highly scrutinised by the Legal Services Board, and your practising certificate is dependent upon you getting a clear audit. In between those audits, however, is if there is a complaint that's lodged about mismanagement or misuse of client trust funds, I think the response time is 24 to 48 hours before trust inspectors turn up. So it's a highly regulated area for legal practitioners, and most lawyers that I know are in a state of fear and shock if there's an irregularity in their trust account, and necessarily so. Unfortunately, the same level of accountability doesn't apply to migration agents.
As well as better trust accounting, John Davey says another way to make the migration advice industry more professional and accountable and better protect clients would be to have a fidelity fund.
The other feature of trust accounting is that there's actually a fidelity fund that all lawyers pay into, so that even if somebody does, to use the vernacular, knocks off the money, the whole legal profession actually insures against that loss. We have an entire public service administration, which is the MARA, which is set up to protect consumers, theoretically. I would suggest the money's better spent for migration agents' registration fees to put it into a fidelity fund and allow people to make insurance claims against it. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, but we do have to have the political motivation to protect people. And that's what's absent here. There's such a demand for migration. It's ripe for exploitation. Mr. and Mrs. Williamson have been exploited. And it's actually a case of regulatory failure, because they have the right to attend an office, deposit money in good faith based upon someone's registration as a migration agent, and know that they're protected. And in this particular case, they simply weren't.
John Davey, Principal Solicitor at Herm Legal and Migration Services in Melbourne. Every year, the OMARA, the Office of the Migration Agents Registration Authority, receives hundreds of complaints about migration agents. The record shows that, on average, about a third of those complaints are withdrawn or dismissed as lacking merit. Another third are investigated, but no breach of professional standards is found. In the other cases where a breach is found, about half are deemed minor and resolved without sanction. Perhaps the migration agent agrees to repay some money or undertake some extra training. Rarely is a migration agent suspended or banned, as happened to Dennis Allen. So, despite its severe repercussions for the Williamsons, Camilla Pivato and others, is the case of Dennis Allen an exception, evidence of one bad apple, rather than of a wider problem?
One of the things we know about regulatory failure is that we only know about complaints, and not everybody complains. So when a case like the Williamsons gets to the point where it is now, it's usually indicative of a whole lot of other people who haven't complained because they either don't have the resources or they don't have the emotional or the stamina to actually go through this process. It's not an answer from the MARA to say, we've only had a couple of these cases. If a case like the Williamsons can happen, it certainly can happen again, and that's the problem.
Solicitor John Davey. OMARA is part of the Department of Immigration and Border Protection, so I asked the department about OMARA's handling of the Dennis Allen case. I asked why it took so long to make a finding on the complaints against him, and whether the matter had been referred to police. The department didn't respond directly to those questions, but noted in a statement that the substance and scope of some allegations and the need for procedural fairness means complaints require considerable time to fully investigate. And OMARA doesn't have the power to suspend an agent until the investigation has been completed. You can find the full text of the department's response to my questions on the Law Report website. There are around 6,000 migration agents registered with OMARA, and the ranks of the profession are growing by about 5% a year. A third of migration agents are lawyers, but two-thirds are not, and a six-month graduate diploma is all that's currently required to set up shop as a migration agent. Unlike a lawyer, a migration agent can practice without undergoing any period of supervision first. One of Australia's most expert migration lawyers is Barrister Erskine Roden, who chairs the Migration Law Committee of the Law Council of Australia. He has a steady stream of clients turning up at his office in considerable legal difficulty after receiving poor advice from migration agents who aren't lawyers.
Absolutely. It happens, I could probably say, once a week at least. And I think you'll find in many of the leading migration law practices that the same thing happens. And you're trying to work out a way in which you can try and restore the case or say to the person, well, you know, you better go home before the department say put a full ban on you, okay? The main complaints that we come through our office is person comes in, they said, I had my visa application refused, I have to appeal, or I'm out of time for appealing against this because the migration agent was on holidays, or the migration agent had disappeared, or someone had paid him money and they did nothing. Some of the pitfalls of going to a migration agent who's not a lawyer include the fact that they think they're lawyers and they're not. They don't have the knowledge. Their code of conduct is much weaker than our ethics, lawyers' ethics. And lawyers are respected by people who believe that after 4 or 5 years at university, you've at least got some kind of idea of what you're saying and what you're doing. Okay.
The migration agents themselves might say, yes, but there are plenty of lawyers who don't know anything about migration law. To go to a lawyer is no guarantee of getting good advice about migration in particular, which is a very specific and complex area of the law.
Oh, look, there's some terrific migration agents who are not lawyers. Probably the vast majority of them are. But they've spent the last 20-odd years not dealing with the recalcitrants. And the recalcitrants are a fair number.
A former top investigator with the Department of Immigration has revealed visa fraud is rife and being ignored due to the political focus on boat arrivals. Nick McKenzie has this special investigation.
In a Melbourne hotel, a fixer in the underworld of Australia's corrupt trade in skilled and student visas is plying his trade.
Sometimes a client might not be ripped off by a migration agent, but rather collude with the agent to rort the system to mutual advantage. Last month, a joint investigation by Fairfax and 730 revealed migration agents and their clients conspiring to fraudulently obtain visas. Barrister Erskine Roden says this type of activity has been happening for many years.
I remember once clients said to me, is there anything dodgy we can do to get the application through? And I said, I'm not listening to this, because if you want to talk to me like that way, you leave the room and I don't want to see you again. And that's the only way to deal with them.
Erskine Roden says migration agents need to be more like lawyers, with a higher level qualification, a stronger code of conduct, legal style trust accounts and fidelity funds, and ideally a period of supervision before they can practice independently. Barrister Angela Julian Armitage is president of the Migration Institute of Australia, the professional body that represents migration agents. She acknowledges that the migration advice industry needs to become more professional, but she says a fidelity fund is unnecessary, and while good in theory, a period of supervised practice for newly qualified migration agents is impractical.
Not many people are in a position that can actually offer that form of supervised practice.
Because they're mostly small operators, sole traders, that sort of thing?
Correct, correct. Can I say that the Migration Institute of Australia, in conjunction with ANU, are looking at ways that we can actually offer that in-house?
There have been two reviews of the industry, the 2008 Hodges Review, the more recent Kendall Review in 2014, and both recommended that the six-month graduate certificate that is the qualification for becoming a migration agent should be replaced by a 12-month graduate diploma. It's now 2016. Why hasn't that happened?
It is happening, and I can assure you that it will be very soon that you will hear invitations going out to education organisations and universities calling for expressions of interest to undertake the diploma course.
The federal government will rake in more than $2 billion from visa application charges this year. Yet Angela Julian Armitage says the Immigration Department agency that oversees probity in the industry, OMARA, lacks sufficient resources. Even when fraud is identified, it can be difficult to prosecute because migrants are reluctant to give evidence that might see their own improperly acquired visa revoked. Angela Julian Armitage says, however, that fraudulent, misleading and incompetent behaviour in the migration industry is rare.
The ones that you hear about, of course, are the loudest. You don't hear about the, you know, the practitioners who've been at it 20, 30 years who have never had, you know, a complaint or anybody's even raised an eyebrow about them. But, of course, the bad apples create a lot of noise. Yes, they are very serious issues, but my understanding is that a lot of prosecutions are hamstrung, if you like, by the legislation itself, because there are certain provisions that will catch the person who is prepared to give evidence against an errant advice provider.
So you mean that if there's someone who may be willing to give evidence against a migration agent, they could be doing themselves in, as it were, because they could end up losing their own visa and being kicked out of Australia.
Correct. If they have been complicit. I mean, obviously it's not so black and white, but yes, there is that provision within the legislation, and I've spoken to federal police officers about several matters in the past and recommended that perhaps an immunity situation be put in place so that people are feeling comfort in their candour, if you like.
How adequate is OMARA's regulation of migration agents and its responses to complaints?
The difficulty that exists is that there are very stringent privacy laws in place that prevent the OMARA from publicising what it is that they're doing. So at times it may seem that the OMARA is not taking any action. And once it's been found that there's been an errant agent or that the agent has done something incorrect in relation to an application or a client, that is fully investigated, and there's all sorts of conciliatory type mediation processes in place. But once a complaint gets to a level where it's a lot more than just, well, the agent forgot to sign the client agreement or forgot to pass on something, if it goes beyond that and it actually verges on unregistered practice or any fraud or scams, then it goes to the Australian Federal Police.
Barrister Angela Julian Armitage, President of the Migration Institute of Australia. After putting his wife Shen on a plane back to China almost 2 years ago, retired fitter and turner Michael Williamson followed the advice that the very first migration agent he spoke to had given him. He applied offshore for a partner visa for Shen. The Immigration Department refused the application, questioning whether their relationship was genuine. Finally, though, there's some good news for the Williamsons. On Friday, the Administrative Appeals Tribunal found the Immigration Department had got it wrong. It remitted the decision. That means Shen will now be granted a visa, and husband and wife can be reunited in Australia. In Italy, meanwhile, Camilla Pivato feels that the Immigration Department has punished her more severely than it punished Dennis Allen. Nevertheless, she's completing a degree as an Italian language teacher, determined to return to Australia as a skilled migrant when her 3-year ban on coming back is finally lifted.
Yes, I would really like to come back there. I miss Australia a lot, every single day. But I'm a bit disappointed because it's not just about Dennis Allen. It's about Australia. I mean, I've been ripped off by an immigration agent working in an industry regulated by the federal government. And Dennis Allen has been banned from the OMARA for 5 years. But I'm still kept out.
Camilla Pivato, speaking there to journalist Peter Mayers. Peter is the author of a new book titled Not Quite Australian, How Temporary Migration is Changing the Nation. The book's published by Text. You can find a link to the Dennis Allen decision of the Office of Migration Agents Registration Authority on the Law Report website, along with that statement from the Immigration Department responding to the issues raised in this program. That's it for the Law Report this week. Big thanks to producer Anita Barrow and to technical producer Brendan O'Neill. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next week with more law.